Do it. Hello and welcome to What Else Is On the Show on the Else Nerds Network, where we talk about the past week in the movies and TV shows that we have watched. I am Gregor Sprague, and joining me as always is Corey Scott. Corey, how you doing?
I am well. I am slightly sick, but I'm handling it beautifully, all things considered. After the last few weeks of just pure having a cold,
you turn into Snoopy
is not so bad. What?
You turned into Droopy Dog?
Pretty much. Not to be cliche. In fact, I think I said this on podcast of Terry yesterday. I went to a gay bar on Friday night, and I woke up Saturday with a sore throat. So what does that tell you? We had a good time.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, so before we get started with our reviewing of shows, let's talk this new story that you brought up. I think that you really want to talk about this, and it comes to us from IndieWire, and it's Jason. The title is Jason Blum gets honest about the failure of Gem and the Holograms and the reality of his indie model. So, yeah.
And I don't necessarily want to talk about the article and what his speech was and everything. Although the speech. Starts out with him basically saying, you know, he's going there and he's talking about the indie model of filmmaking and how he believes in it and he wants to teach all these kids about it. And he has to open up with, now what sucks about this is right now I'm opening at like the biggest bomb of a film, you know, and that kind of sucks. And it does. And it sort of should. I don't want to lay a lot on Jason Blum because he apparently wanted to make Gem and the Holograms in a way that was more like the TV series from the 80s, the cartoon series. And as I understand it, and this is something I've been hearing around, is that Hasbro, who owns the property, didn't want that. They nixed taking the show as it was and putting it to film. So I don't necessarily think it was this guy's fault, but I do have a problem with the fact that he went and he did interviews and kind of implied in those interviews that, well, you know, yeah, the theatrical trailer doesn't look like a lot like the cartoon, but you'll be pleasantly surprised, I think, when you see it, making it sound like, oh no, there's going to be those things there. We're just not putting them into the trailer. And that was a bunch of bullshit. And I don't care if you're the guy who made a second better G.I. Joe movie than the first shitball G.I. Joe movie, because that wasn't hard. I've seen people do things with Legos that make those both look like canned snot. But you don't BS the people that you're making the pitch to. You don't BS the fans. And this was a whole big load of BS to the fans. And my problem with it isn't so much that they took a childhood property that I wasn't even a huge fan of. I knew Gem and the Holograms. Strangely enough, I knew it because my best friend watched it, and he was a guy, and he was into the stories. And obviously a lot of the women that I know now as girls watched it, and they were into the stories. And I completely get that. You know, if I watched the show more regularly, I probably would have more things to say about it. But we've seen these kids' properties wind up on the big screen today and just get trashed. You know, the Transformers of the films are pretty much unrecognizable to me, other than the fact that they have the names. They're just a blatant joke of, well, in some cases, you get to see their balls. That's something fun. You see them urinating on people. Oh, Jesus, what a great time. I can't understand how you can take a kid's property, make a film for adults, and make the thing more juvenile than it ever was before. But that's okay, Michael Bay. You go right ahead and love yourself. The thing is that a lot of these properties, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, Transformers, have all been boy movies and boy shows. And G.I. Joe was a punked out piece of crap film, and everybody agreed it was a piece of crap film. The only thing that you could probably say redeeming about it was the fact that it was like one of the big starring roles for Channing Tatum, and then they took that, put him into the sequel just to kill him. By the way, spoilers on for the show. but they put The Rock in there. But G.I. Joe being so bad, got a sequel, and had a huge budget in both cases. You know, maybe not spectacularly huge like a Marvel film or something, but did pretty well with the budget. Transformers, very much panned. The first one probably less so because they just somehow got consistently worse, but still really bad movies. Sell a lot of tickets somehow, and the budgets are huge, and they keep coming back, and they keep coming back. TMNT, nobody that I know who was a TMNT fan wanted to see those movies, wanted to see this movie, this new version of the movie. The fans that are like the pure fans really didn't like it. A lot of people said it was all right, but a lot of people just hated it because of the stupid changes that they made and the nostrils and everything else. Again, given a big budget, getting a sequel.
And I
all
think
those
that's,
things have... Go ahead.
And I think that's the difference, though, between those and Jim and the Holograms.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. That is the difference. And the difference is that they're boys' properties versus a girl's property. And I think that's a huge, huge statement from these companies, because Jim and the Holograms should have been treated with the same respect, at least of these other things. Now, Transformers and G.I. Joe and Ninja Turtles are absolutely top-of-the-game things for young boys. I mean, you can't get three hotter properties than those from the 80s. A Silverhawks or a Thundercats, which I hold in a similar regard, probably not at that level. But Gem and the Holograms was one of the top ones of those for girls and, like I said, for some guys in the 80s. And to see it get a shoestring budget and be told, basically, we don't want it to be too much like the show to the person who's making the movie and is excited to make a movie about the show, to not involve things like synergy, to basically make it like a Justin Bieber documentary, which has been compared to a lot because the guy also did that documentary.
Jason Blum did? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And just interspersing stuff of YouTube in there, interspersing a lot of shots of Google Earth, as I understand it. That's really crappy, and I think it's a pretty terrible statement to say we don't value the girls who love these properties. We don't value the girls who bought these toys to the same degree that we value the guys. So they undersold the hell out of this project, mm-hmm. and he worked on a shoestring budget, and he also made a movie that wasn't true to, if it at least had something true to the original aspect of it, that would have been something. A bad budget is a bad budget is a bad budget. You can't do a lot with that, but at least if you keep the spirit there and you keep the characters correct, and you make it feel, you feed the nostalgia. That's why these things come out. Now, Hollywood is going to say, oh, well, no one wants to go see these movies, these girl toy movies, so we're not going to make these other ones, or we're not going to do something with Strawberry Shortcake. We're not going to do something with She-Ra. We're not going to do any of these things, because why would we? That's really crappy to do when the model has shown that even when they make bad movies for the other properties, they get some money back, and they get sequels. I think that's really lousy, and it really bums me out, because this is the same mentality that we have with DC and Marvel not wanting to make female figures, and not wanting to make female-led superhero films, and not wanting to put them on T-shirts. I just think that's such a blatant bullshit way to present these things to feed the argument that nobody wants it. You know, you're creating the dilemma that you're stating is there on your own. And I think that's really terrible, because I want there to be a great Gem and the Holograms movie, and I want there to be a She-Ra movie, and I want there to be, you know, a Black Widow film or a Scarlet Witch film or the Captain Marvel film that I'm still looking forward to, even though it keeps getting pushed back. I want Wonder Woman to be a film about Wonder Woman. I don't want it to be a prequel to Batman v Superman. I don't want it to be hinged on these male characters. I want her to have her own property and film. And I don't know exactly what they're doing with that. That's neither here nor there. I think that these things can succeed if we just stop bullshitting ourselves and acting like women don't want to see movies and women don't want to enjoy nostalgia. The biggest fanboys in the world are fangirls. you know, they are the greatest people. This fake geek girl bullshit that's been going around for years at cons, it's all from the people who are so upset because their fucking fandom is getting overrun by people who want something new and something different and something that's aimed towards them. Not instead of. It's not like you can't have your Punisher and your Wolverine and your Spider-Man and everything. But God damn it, girls should be able to read comics too and get the same things. Girls made X-Men one of the biggest hits in comics because X-Men with just the guy vote is the same as Batman with just the guy vote and the same as Superman with just the guy vote. Mm-hmm. Women took to those characters because they included women. They included strong female characters in that. And those women made that thing bigger than what it would have been without them. You added to the fandom. And then the films come out, the cartoons come out, all that stuff. Women were a part of that and a huge part of that. And I think that there's still some sort of setback that comic books and cartoons are only for boys, unless the cartoons are cutesy and pink. It's the Barbie aisle methodology. I just really find that disgusting at this point in time that we haven't figured that out yet, that the people who sit there and are bean counters and are saying, well, it's all about the bottom line to us, well, then shut up and feed your bottom line by making your audience broader. And I really am afraid that this movie is going to be a detriment to some of the strides that we've finally been making on inclusiveness for female characters and female viewership. And it just pisses me off, something fierce. So, I mean, Jason Blum, sorry, man. I'm sorry that your movie wound up being a suck fest, and I'm sorry that it sounds like maybe it wasn't your fault. Welcome to the Fantastic Four era of films that get so much bad press because they don't respect the original content. But at the same time, you should have walked away. If they wouldn't let you do something that was true to the property and you claim that you're a fan of that property, then you should have walked away instead of adding to the destruction of female characters being in films. Because you made it harder for everybody else.
Yeah. And real quick, I want to mention some of the other points that the article made, because you might not necessarily know who Jason Blum is, besides the fact that he... and to be honest, it wasn't just Gem and the Holograms that tanked, but he's also the producer. His company, Blumhouse Productions, also released Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension, which also was a box office disappointment.
But that's a blaming on the fact that it wasn't released in as many theaters because they wanted to release it as streaming at the same time.
Yeah. But he also talks about something interesting from what I read from the article, is because he has this model of each movie only, like, they have this adjusted scale to where, like, I think they said the actors are paid, like, $3,000, like just over $3,000 a week.
They're paid scale.
Yeah, they're paid on they're paid to scale.
What the minimum is for Hollywood actors, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, and every movie has a budget of $5 million, essentially. They have where, yeah, Gem and the Holograms might have failed, and the Ghost Dimension, or Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension, might have failed. There's less of a risk in that way because of the fact that it wasn't like Transformers, which is a billion-dollar production, failing.
Right, but at the same time, you at least stay true to the source. And mm-hmm. we reviewed on Podcast of Terror this week, the episode will be out tomorrow, we reviewed a bunch of short films made by fans. Yes, it is a little bit of a plug. I'm not going to talk about how much we swear on it. Apparently, that's what we're cool about. We reviewed a bunch of short films that are based off of creepypasta stories. And these were all fan-made short films. And some of them, the quality was very sketchy. And some of the quality was actually really pretty good for people who were doing this for themselves, out of fandom, out of trying to be inclusive into something. You know, they took the original stories, and they ran with them, and they made something. Some of them are actually really spectacular, and I know that those budgets were way low. Now, they're shorts. The longest one was probably about 11 minutes, and a lot of them were anywhere from 4 to 6 minutes. But that still, it shows that something can be done. You have to treat these, if you're going to take someone else's property, and you're going to take something that so many people are already big fans of, and utilize it, then do it correctly. Do it with the respect that property deserves. If you're just cashing in for it, then I'm sorry, but no one is going to respect you and your work. And I know that he swears up and down that he tried to do it right, and he tried to approach it as a fan, and they cock-blocked him. But you know what? If you're getting cock-blocked, walk away, because you don't have to have your name associated with that. You don't have to take something that you claim to love and take the preciousness and the joy out of it and just do it so it's done. You know, if you're saying that if you hadn't done it, nobody else would have done this movie, well, guess what? We would have been better off if nobody had done this movie.
Well, and he also stated other things, like, and I don't want to say, like, make it sound like he's just come up with excuses, but they did, as a production company, they did, I think, like, 10 films this year, which is a lot. They did, and it's not just like they're a genre production company. No, they won awards. Like one of the movies that they did, it's a little film you might have heard of called Whiplash, a movie I freaking love.
Yeah,
I love Whiplash.
So can and, do better than this.
Yeah,
seem to think this was worth the effort.
Yeah,
I mean, if I'm just shitting on your vision because your vision was this, then I'm sorry, but I think your vision and scope are way off from what people wanted, and I think you should know that if you looked at the original property. But that's the thing, is I see him saying things, and I know that he at least has some comprehension of what Gem and the Holograms is about, and he didn't do that. He didn't provide it. And all I can see is that this is going to be an excuse to just not try anything like this anymore. You know, you should have done a new story. You should have done something that you said to fans, oh, it's kind of like Gem and the Holograms then. You could have done that. There's enough of that out there. Nothing seems original anymore.
With how I read the article, I don't think that's where he's coming from. I think that's where other people will go to.
Right. But I don't think he's the one who's going to say we won't make any more films like this.
Yeah.
But I think that Hollywood is going to say, no, we're not going to invest in that.
And
I think
and
that it already stemmed from they wouldn't invest it in the first place.
Yeah, and that's honestly the shame. And all that, I'll have a link to it in our show notes in the video. I just got to remember to edit it once I get done. So onto the show, onto the review section. And part of me is sad to actually do this review because the one who's been hounding us to watch this movie is not here. Beatmaster is not here. Don't really know where he's at, but he's probably just busy.
And he's probably just going to give me shit anyways because I still haven't watched the damn movie and yeah. I've been promising to get to it for like a year.
And I'm going to say, Snowpiercer, I could see where B is. There's a flop bug around here just right in my eye, peripheral vision. But where Beatmaster, I see where Beatmaster's coming from, and I did really enjoy the movie. I think he might be a little too into the movie to be hounding us, because I don't necessarily feel like it is one of those movies that you absolutely have to watch. I will say the fight scenes in here, spectacularly done. I was sitting there going, oh my gosh, these are so, I don't know who the fight choreographer is, but it's really well done. Really just artfully, this movie is very artful. There's moments in here where you're just like, they'll slow down time, and it's not like just like a Matrix bullet time effect. It's they have a reason for doing it, but they don't tell you right away. The gore in here, with some of the fight scenes, is intense. The one thing that, because Snowpiercer came out, what, 2013, I think.
I think so. Like that sounds right.
2012, 2013. Some of the effects are already starting to look a little dated. So that's the only part that's going to have against it for longevity. Like, you know, it's going to be like watching Back to the Future, and you'll be like, oh, wow, you can really tell that this was made in the 80s, sort of deal. You know, it's going to have that sort of thing for me. But luckily, it's not a very heavily CG movie. So there's only going to be a few little scenes where you're like, didn't have the best budget, you know, sort of deal. And, but the story is great. The story is basically you have this train. This guy made this this rail system that goes around the Earth, basically around the Pacific Ocean in a way, because it's the only ocean it doesn't cross. And the whole track takes a year to go. Like, so you start here, you go all around, that's a year. And he did it because it's a little bit like Noah's Ark. Like, oh, he knew something was going to happen. I think he was just doing it here's a cool little travel thing. You know, go around, and if you stay on the train the whole time, it'll take you 1 year, sort of deal. This apocalypse thing happens to where the Earth freezes, and you have sections of these cars, like the front half is the people who bought tickets, and they're like the more wealthier people, and then the back section is the bums who ride the rails sort of people. Like, they're the people who were let on for free, and it has an amazing cast in there. I will say that. Like, you got Chris Evans, who you know about. I am blanking on her name.
Tilda Swinton?
No.
Allison Pill?
No, the black lady. Octavia Spencer. They're both in there. But you know about them. They're both in there. William Hurt is in here.
John Hurt.
Oh, yeah, John Hurt. John Hurt's in here.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris. Ed Harris, I'm sitting there going, because he's not in there until the end. Spoilers, but we already warned you. But he's not in there until the end. I'm like, wait, who is... That's the dude from Apollo 13. What is his name? God, it's like Ed something, Ed... And eventually I got him like, yeah, it's Ed Harris. You know, brilliant role. He played the role brilliantly. There's a bald dude in there, I swear, is the guy that they had on Flash as the gas guy, and then the Victor Zsasz or whatever in Gotham. Because he looks almost exactly like him, but he's not. It is a Korean film because it's a Korean director. So, but it's this cool film thing because the two languages that are spoken are Korean and English, but it's mainly English. And so that's the cool part about this film, is this is a foreign film made for an American audience, in that way. The whole, to see all the different, train or coach or cars as they're going through, and the different dynamics of the whole, of the train as you're going through, was breathtaking, because you have this back train, which is like the slum car, where, you know, they're all like basically living in this alley, in a way of speaking. And then you move further and further forward, and you see the wealth until you get to the head of the train, or do you get the train pulling it, and it's beautiful, futuristic thing that comes out, and it's just brilliantly done. I'm not going to say anything about the ending, because to spoil the ending is to spoil a masterpiece, in my opinion. Like, the ending is so well done. And I say check it out. It's not one of these things like, oh, you have to check it out, you know, whatever. But, like, if you have Netflix, it's on there. Check it out that way. I think it might be on Amazon Prime as well. And if you have any other ways to get it, but definitely check it out. It is worth the watch.
I think you just painted it in a different light than what I thought of it. Like, for some reason, never in my mind pictured fight scenes and stuff when it's been talked about or when I've read stuff about it before. But I've sort of I've glanced over it. Everybody who's watched it has said great things about it. So
yeah,
or at least that I've seen. So there's no reason for me to avoid it. It's just every time I kind of flip through on my what to watch on Netflix queue, and then I wind up not watching anything because there's too goddamn much stuff there. I just see it. I'm like, oh yeah, Snowpiercer. Flip, flip, flip. You know, it just
is, yeah, it is worth, because I watched it yesterday. Because I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta watch it because I told B I would, and it was well worth the, you know, the fact that I was just sitting there and I'm like, I was doing it out of a commitment. I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh. But yeah, there are fight scenes in there, but it's, you sort of expect that with the premise of Chris Evans is leading this group of people to try to take the front because, you know, they're living in utter horror. Like, they're living in shitty conditions, you know? And, I mean, it's freaking awesome to see all this stuff. There's a fight done. There's this one scene in this one car as they're going through a tunnel that it's all in dark, so you go into the vision, the view of the enemy, because they all put on the night vision goggles. And so you see, ever complete with the HUD that they see, sort of like that has the cross, the little mark, cross marker right there, and all that stuff. And even that, I'm like, this looks cool. And I'm sitting there thinking, was this made for 3D? Because that seems like that'd be a really cool thing to see in 3D. Like, just like the, oh, I'm actually playing a video game right now, or whatever, because it's sort of what it looked like. And wait, did you say Tilda Swinton was in here?
Tilda Swinton, yeah.
I have to look up who she played, because if she played who I think she played, holy crap, Tilda Swinton is phenomenal.
Tilda Swinton is normally phenomenal, so I have no problem agreeing with you on that sight unseen. I like how the fact that you say, well, I told Beatmaster that I would watch it, so I had to watch it, and throw me under the bus like a dick. Thank you for that.
No, it was more because I needed something to watch on Sunday, and I'm like, I knew, like, it was either I was going to watch it yesterday, or I was going to watch it today while I was doing, while I was writing up starts and stops and all that. And I'm just like, oh, I watch it now because I don't got anything else to do. And who does Tilda Swinton play?
My guess is someone androgynous.
Oh, wow. Holy crap. Holy crap. She plays the... You'll see this lady come in who she talks to the lower people. Does not look like at all like Tilda Swinton. Yeah. I thought it was some no-name, like some, well, at least obscure for American English actress. No, that's Tilda freaking Swinton. Holy crap.
Acting!
Yeah.
Yeah, so Snowpiercer. Yes. So I've got another person telling me to watch it that I'm probably not going to listen to.
That's fine. No, it's, see, here's the thing. I don't do it in a way where people do it in a little bit more guilty way because, like, guilty
and
way.
Damn it, for all the Beat does for us in this show and in other shows that we enjoy just as fans, Beat is owed. We owe Beat. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna call myself out on being a dick. I'm sorry, Beatmaster. You're a good man, and I should bow to you and respect you more. So,
all right. So, Corey, you've seen Fargo. You've been watching this. You watch Fargo. I have not gotten into Fargo, so this is your chance to pull a Beat and get on me about not watching Fargo.
I know that we talked about Fargo last season because I watched the whole last season. And have you ever seen Fargo the movie?
No.
Oh, wow. Fargo the movie has a lot of similarities to last season. Last season of the TV show started up, I say last season, which was the first season, and I thought it was going to be retelling the movie. And in some ways, they're incredibly similar with some major changes that become more apparent over time. In last season, it followed this one deputy, actually followed several people, but in the main deputy character, she goes and talks to her dad who's working in a diner type restaurant at night. Her dad used to be a local cop. And in a conversation in one of the episodes, as they're dealing with these murders and stuff that are going on, he mentions an old case that he had many years ago that was also very grisly, and how this thing that she's working on kind of reminds him of that. This season is about that case. So whereas the first season was more of the modern day storyline and everything, but still taking place in the Midwest in that sort of Fargo territory, everybody's got that cool Minnesotan accent. This is the character, I forget the name of the actor, but he played, well, he was on, I believe he was on Dexter for a while. He was dating Dexter's sister. He's an older actor. He's a pretty cool guy, but he is not playing himself in this one, obviously. This time it's being played by Patrick Wilson. Patrick Wilson is married to Kristen Milioti, who you recognize from screwing us in the ending of How I Met Your Mother, and from that
A to Z.
Yeah, A to Z. The not Manhattan love story, Manhattan love story from last season. Wonderful actress. Unfortunately, in this one, she's dying from cancer again. It's terribly typecast. Her father, who is a sheriff from the next town over, is played by Ted Danson. Let's see. We have Michael Weston from Burn Notice is in this, Jeffrey Donovan. Gene Smart, Kirsten Dunst, Fat Damon. That's all I'm ever going to call him. I know his name is Jesse Plemons, but he's Fat Damon to everybody. Brad Garrett is in this. Kieran Culkin is in this. It is a spectacular cast. And it's one of those things, Evan, one of our producers, asked at the beginning of, before we went on air, how does this second season compare connectively
to... Hold on, time out. Before you get to that.
Sure.
Because you've mentioned Jeffrey Donovan, who is on Burn Notice, but you failed to mention Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell has not shown up yet.
Okay, that's why.
That is why.
Sorry, I'm on the Wikipedia page. I'm like,
but I do know that Bruce Campbell is coming up, and I'm pretty sure I know who Bruce Campbell is playing, which is even cooler. But Evan asked me, you know, the first to second season of Fargo, how does that compare to the first to second season transition of True Detective? And there is no comparison. One, like I've already said, there is an actual connection between the two seasons of Fargo. The other thing is that there seems to have been zero drop in quality. I can't say that it's better because the first season was so incredible. But I know that the first season, I was still sort of confused as to if it was retelling the movie or not for the first few episodes. So it took me a while to really appreciate it. This season, we're two episodes in, and it's just been fantastic the whole time through. And Erin and I watch it, and she's really taken with it. She thinks it's great, and she loved the first season as well. The music is astoundingly well chosen. Obviously, it's suiting the era because it's taking place in 1971, which is when I was born. And it's just got that great 70s era feel, but a lot of different types of that of music from that period. It is creepy and weird and violent and funny and does everything it can to fill you with intensity and still crack you up at the same time and gross you out more than a little bit. The characters are all interesting. Even the random characters. I mean, that's what the Coen brothers do with their films, is just the characterization and everybody. Just for a brief moment, you get this flash of someone and you're like, wow, okay, I can totally hear their voice in my head from now on. And I don't know if I want them there or not, but they're still really good. This is obviously not the Coen brothers doing the show, but it's so respectful to what they've done, and it picks up with what they've done and grows from it. I can't imagine that they could have done any better. It's just so good. And I, two episodes in, it's not even so much of a mystery to the viewer. We know what's happening, but it's a mystery of where it's going to go and how much worse things are going to get, because you just know that they're going to get worse and worse. And it's kind of amazing. So I definitely say that you have to see this. Oh, Patrick Wilson is in this. One of the guys who plays one of the sort of Geek Squad ghost hunting guys from Insidious with Patrick Wilson is also in this, which I thought was really funny because I love those guys in those movies. Angus Sampson is playing Bear Gerhardt. And I just, like, Insidious movies, the first one was really good. The second one, not as good. And the third one was also pretty terrible. But anytime those guys, the two Geek Squad guys, are on the screen, I love it. I crack up.
All right. So that actually has the perfect transition into Starts and Stops, because it's the end of the month. And with November comes stuff leaving Netflix and coming to Netflix and leaving Netflix, as well as Amazon Prime. Including on November 1st, Fargo, the movie. So if you haven't seen the movie, you might want to get on there and watch it if you just heard Corey's review and you're like, oh, man, I want to watch it, but I want to watch the movie first.
You really need to see Fargo, the movie.
Yes.
It is it is incredible. Peter Stormare is in that movie. I think it was the first thing that I ever saw him in. And now he's a character actor who winds up in so many different things. And he's always just got the right kind of creepiness and tone to him, but nothing like when you first see him in Fargo. And Steve Buscemi, just so good, just so damn good. I can't believe you haven't watched it.
It's got everything that I would like. It's got the Coen brothers. It's got, you know, all this whole cast.
William H. Macy.
Yeah, it's got, you know, all this cast that I like. It's just me being lazy, and I'm gonna have to fix that this week.
Yeah.
And what else is there? The Saw movies, Saw 1 through 5. I think that's most of them, if not all of them, will be leaving.
It seems like a lot of the horror staples that have been on there that were just to like get through.
Yeah.
Halloween.
Shanghai Noon. What is it? Towards the end of the month, on the 22nd, the Steve Jobs Lost Interview will be leaving. But that's enough about the leaving stuff. You might be saying, well, what's coming to Netflix? And well, I'll tell you. On the TV side, you have on the 15th, you have the final season of Continuum. And then on the 20th is Marvel's Jessica Jones season 1.
That's like my weekend.
But they've done it brilliantly because you have 2 weekends here. Because on the 13th, which is what I was looking for, is with Bob and David season 1, the pretty much continuation of Mr. Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like there's 2 weekends right there that we as the show will be talking about more than likely. But there's that stuff that we can talk about later on. Is there anything on the TV side? Not really. In the movie side, there is a movie coming out called Idris Elba, Mandela, My Dad, and Me. That just sounded interesting. John Mulaney, The Comeback Kid, on the 13th is a stand-up special. Because it's, if you look at a lot of my Netflix history, it's watching comedy specials. And then over on Amazon Prime, they have Mr. Selfridge season 3. Man in the High Castle comes out on November 20th. Which is not quite there to get me to rent to or pay for Amazon Prime. And then from the 5th to the 12th, they have The Imaginary Aim of Dr. Parnassus. Fantastic movie. I love that movie. On the 14th, they have Ex Machina. Another fantastic movie. Evan's asking me a really interesting question. And the answer is yes. Yes, Man in the High Castle and Marvel's Jessica Jones come out at the same day. And then on the 11th, or November 22nd through the 28th, And there would be Kate and Leopold in top five, which top five can be found at many Dollar General stores, including the one I work at.
Blatant plug.
No, it's just, not necessarily a full blatant plug, but more like one of those things, like I'm noticing, like, oh, hey. But at another one, in the back, they have a box for Pixels. I had to laugh. Like a full-on display box. I'm like, wow. You start off with the summer being released in movie theaters, not doing all that great, but still being released in movie theaters, and it's October, and it's like 3 months after your movie is released. You're in Dollar General and they're bargain bin movies. But that is what's coming out on the streaming side. Let's talk about the rest of the week. Starting with tomorrow, Tuesday, October 27th, on MLB, on Fox, you have the World Series starts at 7:30, and it's like, we have pretty much the whole schedule on there, but I'm not going to say all of it because not everyone's sports fans. At 8 p.m. on Esquire, you have the series premiere of Top Chef Canada. And then at 10 p.m. on ABC is the series premiere of Wicked City, which if you haven't been watching ABC, you may have missed the previews because they've been playing the crap out of those previews.
The crap out of it.
On Wednesday at 9 p.m. on NBC is back-to-back new episodes at a special time of Chicago PD, basically stalling before we have the Wednesday night Chicago block on NBC. And then at 10:30 on CNBC, you have the extended cut of The Prophet. It's a one-hour special presentation. On Thursday at 9 p.m. on Animal Planet, you have the sixth season premiere of Monsters Inside Me, with the episode called There's Something Living in My Knee. And then at 10:30, it's a new episode of Special Time of Watch What Happens Live with Sarah Silverman and Mike Tyson. And then on October 30th and at 12:01 a.m. on Amazon, you have the second season premiere of Gordon McGibbon's Life on Normal Street. And then at 9 p.m. on NBC is the fifth season premiere of Grimm.
Just real fast, I don't see it on here, and I don't blame you for not having it, but Matt and I have been discussing this. On Friday night, there is going to be on Destination America, which is a channel I'd never really heard of before. They are doing a live exorcism.
Oh, yeah, so it is on there. I didn't... that's Saturday that I think I have it.
I think it's supposed to be on Friday that it's happening. That's what my DVR says.
Oh, I didn't, because I didn't put it in there because I'm like, wait, what?
Okay. Well, because it's live, it's different times for different time zones. So I guess it's recording at 6 o'clock for me. It's 8 o'clock where Matt is, so it should be 9 o'clock your time. So yeah. It's happening live all across the board.
Yeah. So you can check that out if you want. But then on Saturday, Halloween, at 9 p.m. on Stars is the series premiere of Ash vs. the Evil Dead with the episode called El Jefe. And then at 10 p.m. on Sundance is the second season premiere of The Returned. And we're teasing out a lot of stuff here for future episodes. On Sunday, November 1st at 8 p.m. on TNT is the second season premiere of The Librarians. I'm excited for the show to be back because it's this nice little enjoying, like, show I can enjoy.
I really enjoyed the show, but unfortunately I missed most of the episodes because they were on the DVR that I turned in. I didn't get to see a lot of the last season. I'm hoping that it winds up on Netflix or something. I haven't seen it pop up yet.
Yeah, and then on Comedy Central at the same time, it's a Comedy Central special, Jeff Dunham Unhinged in Hollywood. 9 p.m. on Nat Geo, you have the series premiere of Breakthrough, Fighting Pandemics, directed and narrated by Peter Berg. And then AMC has the new 90-minute episode of The Walking Dead. And then at 10:30, to walk you through, didn't intend for the pun to be there, the episode of Walking Dead is a new episode of Special Time of Talking Dead. And also, interesting note with Walking Dead, they will have trailers for Into the Badlands and Preacher.
Both series that I'm looking forward to. Preacher, because it's a property that I've loved for years. Into the Badlands, just because it looks pretty damn cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen, like, everything I've seen from Into the Badlands, I'm like, oh my gosh. And in a couple moments, I'm like, is that Timothy Oliphant? Or not Oliphant, Timothy Olmanson? The dude who played Lassie on Psych.
Yeah, and plays the king on...
In Gallivant, yeah. I'm like, is that him? And then I'm like, is that Andy Serkis? Which I think might be the same guy. But, and then on Monday, November 2nd, at 12:15 a.m. on Adult Swim, you have the second season premiere of Mike Tyson Mysteries. At 8 p.m. is the time slot premiere of CBS's Supergirl. We've already talked about it because we are filthy, filthy pirates. Well, some of us here are more filthier than others. And we have seen the pilot. I've seen it, or most of it, again. Still good.
Enjoyed and it. I have a recording on my DVR, so having seen it, that obviously means that Gregor and I both enjoyed it enough to keep watching it.
Mm-hmm. Or to watch the pilot again.
Yeah, I'm going to watch the pilot again, probably after we're done here tonight. But I'm just saying, I am super excited for the show. Not just because of all the BS stuff that Jim the Holograms that I was talking about earlier, just in general, I find the portrayal of the character so uplifting and so heroic and so everything that I want out of a superhero show. It goes completely in tune with The Flash to me, mm-hmm. which means if you are watching the CW superhero shows, especially if you are enjoying The Flash, please watch Supergirl. Don't be put off by the fact that it's a female lead. Don't listen to people who've just been critical of it because it's a girl-led show. It so seems like that spirit of a person who's trying to do good and who has powers coming in, and it just jumps right into it, and I think that it's going to embrace the nerdiness in the way that The Flash has. And I've got to say, the more I watch Flash, the more I love that about it. And if they've taken that and they've moved that over to this as well, I can't imagine a better pairing of shows.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then real quick to wrap up, starts and stops, because nothing really has changed in Final Curtains. At 11 p.m. on Travel Channel, you have the first season finale of Uncommon Grounds. And like I said, there's nothing at all has changed with Final Curtains. Probably next week I'll see more stuff. And that is it for Starts and Stops. So, I'm going to give one final spoiler warning. We are going to talk Walking Dead. We are going to be here.
If you were on Facebook yesterday, you probably already had this spoiled for you by everybody, or Rolling Stone, or every article that comes out and says, this major character died, click in the article to find out. But by the way, here's his picture in the link. Well, okay. Because we're all assholes and we don't understand how this shit works.
This is where I have to give it up for comicbook.com, because I get their emails because I don't get enough emails during the day, which usually means at work, like 9 times out of 10 while I'm wearing my smartwatch, I'll hear, oh, breaking news. This happened. All right, cool. Whatever. Look at it real quick. Delete it. Done. And they link to that article. But they did the brilliant thing of they showed zombies. They did not show, and I'm being vague to give you time to turn away if you do not want to be spoiled about The Walking Dead. They did not show the person who we don't know what's happened to him. Oops, I said too much. But anyways, so this is the third episode of The Walking Dead. And holy crap, balls McClanahan. I was watching this out in the living room, and I'm sitting there going, what? No, you just did perfect television right there. Like, they did that whole part perfectly, because it's like, and we don't know nothing. And so this is it's weird because we have this point where, with the first three episodes, where we're jumping between the two groups. We have Rick, Michonne, Glenn, Heath, and a few of the other people, like from Alexandria, that are leading this giant walker group away from Alexandria.
Now keep in mind that in that group, sort of, but away from them, are Daryl, Sasha, and Abraham, who are driving just ahead of the zombies to keep pulling them towards this destination farther and farther away from Alexandria. Yeah. So they're with the group in one sense that they're working towards the same goal with them, but they are far enough away from the group that they are not actually in the scenes with them as it's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, you have the like the Link, because they all have walkie-talkies and stuff. But yeah, and then the other side, which was yesterday's or last week's episode, you have the group of Carol, Morgan, Maggie,
Coral,
get in the house. They're all in Alexandria, where they fend off the wolves, and they blare the air horn. That is the connector between the three episodes. Well, not the wolves blare the air horn.
Morgan started out in the first group in the first episode and gets sent by Rick to find out what's going on when the horns start blaring in the town and causing mess up of the whole plan. So Morgan then shows up partway through the second episode in Alexandria to help defend the town when stuff has already happened.
Yeah. And so, I mean, basically we have this interesting moment of, for me, it harkens a little bit back to the first or second episode of the series when Rick is first in Atlanta and they're doing the, and you're seeing...
He's like, riding the horse through town.
Yeah. Yeah. With the town that they're in, and they're trying to get back to Alexandria. And it reminded me of that a little bit. And because Rick said this because I think he's losing it a little bit, but, you know, he knows that Michonne and Glenn are not going to leave people behind if they can, sort of deal. But he's like, yeah, if they can't keep up, leave them. I'm like, okay, Shane, do we shoot the fat guy in the knee?
We haven't really talked about Rick's journey so far this season. I mean, obviously he's back to being semi-crazy Rick again, which is part of the problem I find with the character, is that he keeps going back and forth between being the good guy, the good leader wanting to protect everybody, and being the guy who's like, I want to protect everybody and I'm willing to kill everyone else to do it. If you can't step up, he's got a Carol mentality, and there's an inconsistency in how Rick acts when they need him to change. Sometimes he believes in one philosophy and then it doesn't necessarily happen on a dime, but then he spins around and becomes the other philosophy again for a while. And then he goes back and forth. What happened in this episode in the long term could affect the way that Rick is going to act in the future, because it's something that, I mean, we're going to get to it. Losing the people in Alexandria doesn't affect Rick. He doesn't see them as peers. He sees them as sort of cattle that he has to protect. They're not tough. They're not strong enough to stand up against what they need to. And it's a matter of improve or die. Evolve or die, I think, is the X-Men callback to it.
And did you watch Talking Dead?
I did watch most of it.
Okay. So, like, because they were talking about how the Alexandrian way, especially with Nicholas, was if the shit hit the fan, every man for themselves, sort of deal. Like, we saw that last season. And so that's where it surprised me a little bit, where it seems like, you know, Heath has the moral mindset of, you know, of Glenn and, you know, these guys, where it's like, okay, we're not going to leave someone behind if we can help it, sort of deal.
But they've had it easy. I mean, even Heath, who's been out there, hasn't run into the things that Rick and their group have. Because while they've dealt with walkers, or I think they call them roamers or something like that, they have not had the things like the governor to deal with, the stuff at the prison to deal with. They haven't had the stuff with the cannibals. all of these different things that have shown it's not just you against the dead, it's you against the world. And they've felt incredibly safe where they've been. And I think that what happens with the wolves is it's a wake-up call to everybody else in Alexandria that you think you're protected because you have these gates around you that the dead probably can't get in. And if they do, you can overpower them because they're slow and you can shoot them from afar. No, there are thinking people out there who are more ruthless and worse because they will do things that you're not expecting, and they will break in or they will be let in, if you believe some of the rumors, and take you apart in a way that you were not prepared for. And that's what Rick and Michonne and those are trying. I mean, Rick's not explaining it anymore, but that's what Michonne is explaining to Heath.
Yeah, to Heath.
Heath's character, who I really like a lot, actually.
Well, no, it's, well, Heath is the character. Yeah. The actor played Dr. Dre, I believe, in Straight Outta Compton this past.
So that's what she brings across is like, you think you understand, you think that you're able to deal with this. You haven't dealt with what we have dealt with. And when Rick is saying, if they're holding you back, then you've got to survive. You've got to let them go. It's because at the end of the day, these people only have each other to rely on, and they will try to protect the Alexandrians as much as they can, but they can only protect them by letting the weak ones die,
yeah.
You know, if necessary. You've got to separate the wheat from the chaff, essentially. And Rick is looking at that strictly clinically.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a job to do. This is how I'm doing the job. If you are in the way between me and the job, you're out. And everybody who has spoken against Rick has had a bad time of it because they're not willing to conform. They're not willing to step up. Heath shows that he's bothered by the fact that Rick is so willing to let his people die. But at the end, he steps up. And I think the other people that are in his group who are like, we're just slowing you down. You know, let us go. Let us stay here. I think there's some dumb decisions that were made in this episode, but at least they were the ones who were willing to say, you know, I've got a bullet in my leg, or I've got a broken ankle, or I've already been bit. Just go on. You know, we're keeping you back.
Yeah.
Go on. So I think that, unfortunately, it's like sending your young, strong youth to war, and all your great soldiers who die are usually the best of your populace, and then your populace is weakened because you just killed all the top tier, the people who work out, the people who are strong, the people who have military training. They go off to war and they get killed, and then you're left with the phone sanitizers and the fat IT people and whatever else. So these three people who unfortunately die, they die with the knowledge and the philosophy of like, but it's better if you guys move on.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows that what Rick is doing is affecting the group. Unfortunately, a lot of that group didn't get to stick around.
Yeah.
That's too bad. Strength of character doesn't always equal strength of body.
Okay.
And then the weak ones who just ran away like little bitches got eaten anyways.
Yeah. So let's beat around, almost upon their feet, was actually here, around the major spoiler of the episode. Do you think Glenn is dead?
I don't know. When I watched that scene, did I think that they were killing Glenn? Yes. Did I think that they were taking kind of perverse joy in how they were showing it? Yes. Do I look at it and think that they could easily worm their way out of it? Yes. Would it cheapen the truth of the show? Probably.
Here's where I'm coming from as a guy who's like Damon Lindelof, is reading the comic books, is watching, you know, is reading and watching both of these stuff. If this is the way Glenn goes, I feel like they missed a great opportunity from the comic book to bring over. Like, that's one of the big things I love is when you have, you know, like the introduction of Rosita, Eugene, and Abraham, which is like, you know, almost looks like they took out, have this mystery copy machine thing that you copy the image and it becomes real life. It looks like they did that with them from the comic book. And they're missing, and I'm not going to say exactly how it is because, well, one, you can figure it out yourself. They've had 148 issues, I believe is what they're at right now, of the comic book. But they, with how Glenn dies in the comics, I feel like you would have more of a reaction there from the people, and you had in the comic book, you did, than, oh, Nicholas kills himself landing on top of Glenn and
pulling Glenn down into what was already a very bleak moment.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily disagree with you. At the same time, everybody expects that moment. Everybody who's familiar with the comics or has heard the stories is expecting that moment. And it was a joke on At Midnight, mm-hmm, by Robert Kirkman, which was an effective joke because Maggie just was like going to shoot Kirkman in the head. That moment. Sorry, Kirkman, you look like you were hungry for flesh. Had to do it. I think that is an expectation, and the show wants to break us from those expectations because it wants people to keep reading the comics, but it wants people to watch the show with different thoughts and knowing that different things can happen. That's why Andrea is dead on the show. That's why Judith is alive on the show. That's why Carl still has two eyes on the show. They've changed.
That's why Rick has two hands.
Yes, they change where things happen, whom they happen to. They change characters by saying, okay, well, here's this one character, but who they are in the comic, we're actually going to apply it to this other character here on the program. All of those things do. And I don't think that there's any way that they could have killed Glenn that wouldn't affect viewers. Because Glenn has been there.
I'm not talking about affecting viewers. I'm talking about affecting,
in the best way?
Affecting Maggie, affecting everyone else. Because not right now, and this is ignoring Scott Gimple saying we're going to see Glenn in some way, whether it be a flashback, okay, whatever, or we see him as a walker.
Or pieces of him, as they said.
Or piece in some sort of with part or whatever. This to me feels like if they don't do anything, if they go the approach where he's not shown up as a walker, you're going to have a season where they broke Maggie because she's just going to be worried once everyone else shows up, but Glenn and but Nicholas, and then the other ones that they know have died. It's like, all right, but where's Glenn? Where's Glenn? Where's Glenn?
But that in itself is a strong story. I mean, it's a repeated story because that was the season with the barn.
Yeah.
And wondering where Sophia was that whole time.
She's in the barn!
But if we never get the answer, that's something that is reasonably likely to happen in this world, is people go off and you don't know that you'll ever see them again. And I feel that there's a realism to that. I believe mm-hmm. that's honest, if that's the story. Is that more honest than Glenn surviving? Is that more honest than Glenn getting beaten in the head? I don't think it matters because at the end of the day, it's loss. And it's a long-suffering loss. People, I am friends with somebody who I know from high school, sort of, and more from getting to know her more on Facebook. She had a family member just disappeared, and there was, you know, a long, long time of not knowing, and that not knowing is torturous. That is something that you can't fathom, getting up every day, trying to go to sleep every night, and just wondering what happened. You just want the truth by the end of the day, whatever it is, knowing that it's probably the worst. It can't be any worse than what you are already imagining. And I think that that's something that can lead to some great storytelling with Maggie and with the rest of the group if they let that happen. I don't want that to happen because I loved Glenn as a character. I loved Steven as an actor. I want to have his presence still on the show. I like him and Maggie together. At the same time, I'm going to be totally honest here. Before the show started, we were watching Fargo, and then we watched Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. When Fargo was ending, Erin looked at me, and she's like, this show is so good, it's so much better than The Walking Dead. Because she was kind of dreading that the show was about to start. And I said, are you not enjoying it? She's like, it's fine. And I said, excitedly, we don't have to watch it. We have the opportunity to stop watching the show. I've been on this track for a while. I watch The Walking Dead not out of joy anymore, but out of repetitiveness. Out of, like, we've talked before about reading a comic past the time when the comic's any good, but you keep reading it because it's a character that you like, and you're like, well, maybe they'll get someone on here who's better at some point. I don't think the show is gone downhill, but I think my time with the show is burning me out because it doesn't stop. And I'm just like, baby, we can skip it. We can leave this behind. We don't have to watch it. She's like, no, we have to watch it. No, goddammit, we don't. But we watched it. And she's like, I think somebody's going to die tonight. I'm like, I know somebody's going to die tonight because, unfortunately, I had the story spoiled by a news story earlier in the week, and I knew exactly what was going to happen. They were still treating it like a rumor, and they were like, is this really going to happen? Yeah, it probably is. So I didn't have an emotional attachment to it, other than the fact that I don't want to see the guy go. Yeah. And I don't have an emotional attachment to it if he comes back, because at this point, it's hard to be emotionally attached to these characters or the show. One, because of the wishy-washy nature of Rick, who is the lead of the show, and a lot of people just want him to die to get him out of the way. Yeah. Because some of the things that were cool about him have been transferred over to other characters in better ways, and they aren't so back and forth. And also just because you can't keep investing in something endlessly and not ever get the change or the finality of it. And so if Glenn's story is done, at least Glenn's story is done. If he was my favorite character, I would be like, good, I know I'm out now. He's not, but he's certainly a character that I've loved and wanted to see continue on, wanted to see at the end game, whatever that may be. But I don't know. I don't know that there was a right way or a good way or a better way that this could have been done. I think that in the idea of the bad decisions made, because there were quite a few in this episode, by Glenn that I wouldn't see him making. For instance, trusting a guy who has endlessly been just a mistake after mistake after mistake, who's tried to kill him and not seemed very sorry about it, and was never good at leading a group because he let people in his group die. Why would Glenn keep putting him in charge of the decisions to keep him alive, especially as he's saying the whole time, I've got a wife to get back to.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to keep everybody together, but why is he listening to this dude? It just seemed way off. So I felt that, yeah, that all really sucked. But in the situation of we are surrounded, we are on this one big thing, one guy is going to say, I'm out. Because we already know that his character can't take it. He cannot handle this. He's got essentially PTSD in a situation that never gave him a chance to recover. I think that it makes a certain degree of sense that would be something that could happen to Glenn. That he's so shocked that this guy just offs himself and wasn't prepared for it, that he slips off the box with them and goes down into a unwinnable situation anyways. There may have been some magic way out, and there may still be a magic way out for the show for him. I feel that might be dishonest. On the other hand, the part of me that has hope says, do it. Just bring the dude back. But I can't say that it would ring true. Let him go off into the distance then. The only thing that makes me think that he's gonna come back, really? They didn't have him on the Talking Dead after.
Yeah. I don't know, but that just about wraps up here for us. Because, I mean, what else is there to talk about? You could.
Hey, you could well, then let's talk about format for a second.
Yeah. Because you know all of our typical ways to get a hold of us. We have their email, webpage, all that stuff. But things are going to be changing for the month of November because Corey is going to do NaNoWriMo again.
I'm going to attempt NaNoWriMo again. But yes. I feel better about it this year than I have probably in any previous year, including the year that I won. And that was mostly because I was unemployed. Yeah. But I have a plan. And unfortunately, I have found that to make any kind of headway on writing, as much as I love doing this show, and I would come and do this show just to shit talk for an hour every week, there is a lot of work that goes into the show, as ridiculous as it is, because the work is sitting and watching movies and TV, which is fun, which is why we were doing this in the first place. It's why we met up with Glenn and Dave when they were doing the original version of the show. It's, and I love you guys, so I love to just come and hang out with you guys. And I'm not trying to close myself off, although I may have to kill Facebook for a while. I'll keep Slack, though. I will keep Slack for the group. But I can continue doing Podcast of Terror because it's one movie a week. I can't do a show where I have to watch 5 or 6 shows every week and keep up with them in my head while I'm trying to write 2,000 words, a little under 2,000 words a day, and work a job and, you know, spend some time with the fucking loved ones. I honestly do like to spend time with. Unfortunately, a lot of the time that I spend with them is in front of the TV. So I am terribly disappointed that I can't be on the show over the month of November, but I am genuinely super, super excited about what it sounds like is going to go on in my absence.
Yes.
And I'm more than a little jealous.
Here's the one thing, because I will ask you this. Are you going to watch Ash vs. Evil Dead? Okay. So here's my proposal to you. You could come back 2 weeks from now, because I'm going to try to get Matt to come in and replace you then. And all you talk about is that, and it's like a special Podcast of Terror edition of what else is on, but with this knucklehead in there as well.
Let me give you fair warning. Apparently, we are terrible people on the Podcast of
Terror. Hey, I will give you fair warning. I'm sitting there about ready to go onto the Facebook page and be like, okay, you realize what else is on is going to give Podcast of Terror a run for its money if this episode is any indication?
Do you listen to Podcast of Terror?
Yes.
Yeah, shut up. it's okay. You're not our audience. It's not the highest level of smut that I've ever gone to, because unfortunately for my loving, happy friends who I adore, the D20 podcast has gotten to the worst of the worst of the worst. Dreg the internet for that slime. It's good times. I love it, but a lot of people probably should never hear it, and probably better shouldn't know that I'm associated with it, even though it's mostly me.
But the cool thing with this,
I'm not saying anything said about Podcast of Terror in recent episodes of Sci-Fi Geeks Club is incorrect.
Yeah,
I'm just saying we are who we are, and I would love to come back and do that episode. Or at least pop in for that part of it. And I am definitely going to, if this winds up in an audio format, listen to the episodes on my drives to and from work excitedly, because I have heard rumors that Brad Ludwig is going to be on here of Adventure Party and also of Sci-Fi Geeks Club.
Right now my plan is Brad will be next week. Matt will be the week after. Week 3 and week 4. Is there 5 weeks in November?
Oh, God, I wish there was. I don't think there is, but I wish there was, because it would make things so much easier for writing.
No, there are 5 Mondays in November.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, nice.
So week 3, week 4, and week 5, because I'm going by the Mondays here. I don't have people in there. This is my call. Dave Nelson, I want you on for one of those 3 weeks if you can do it.
I think you got to get Tasteful Dave. I would love it if Daryl made it on.
Daryl would be cool. But Daryl,
a very British episode. It depends on time and everything.
Well, Daryl, the problem with that is, from what I understand, the internet is an issue for him.
Okay.
That's why he's never really on live.
Have him tape all of his segments ahead of time and talk to the recordings and have a blast with it. I think that would be great.
Yeah.
And as I remember, my sleep study happens the first week of December. Mm-hmm. I believe it happens on a Sunday, so I took Monday off. So that Monday I should be well-rested and 7th? Probably a little sloppy, but I should be able to do the show the Monday after.
Nice.
Not like the first,
from what I remember correctly, the 7th is the first Monday.
Okay, then that should be good. That I believe that is the case.
So, but with all that being said, I'm going to really quickly go through this. You can find our Facebook page at facebook.elsners.com, where we post a lot of stuff about like stuff that we find interesting throughout the week. And you can watch us at watch.elsners.com. You can send us mail@elsners.com. And you can – sorry, I just realized there's things I have to do with money and stuff. And you can watch What Else Is On just about every Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Western. All of that's basically scheduled to hosts' work schedules. And we've mentioned them before with getting this here. But next month, I'm just going to call it a Galactic Netcast on What Else Is On month, because they're the people who are over there who you should be watching their shows already if you're not. But you got Adventure Party, Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Alien Invasion, Podcast of Terror. Sorry, Matt, I didn't say that one first, but I've thought of them all before. Am I missing any?
Yeah, you're missing Weird World Weekly. Weekly,
and then the
Alien Invasion podcast.
Yeah, actually, here's the thing. Because we mentioned I said Alien Invasion, but we mentioned Daryl, and he's doing right now Wild Doctor Who's airing. He's showing he's doing his review of them for Who Knows.
Yeah.
So, if you want to hear Super Smart Man talk about Doctor Who, watch or listen to that. You can find
smart and entertaining.
Yes. Yes, exactly. You could find that all at gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com.
You can also find the audio versions of their shows through iTunes or Stitcher in their mega feed or singular episodes. If you're just interested, if you like sci-fi stuff more than you like horror stuff or whatever, in which case, screw you.
All right. All that's left to be said is this has been a Don't Tell Gwen production. We will see you guys next time. Take care, everyone.
I won't.
Yeah, I'll see you guys next week. Corey, he'll be gone.